You're listening to the Overdrive Podcast, Hour 3. It's Mailin' In Friday, brought to you by 1 in 100.
Well, I don't expect a lot, man. Pretty much if the hut doesn't burn down, it's been a good day.
It's kind of what we do on Friday.
I was transferring the contents of the file into this flexible accordion-style folder.
I'm not working today, man. I got an earache.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050. The Leafs live here.
Mailin' In Friday, brought to you by 1in100.net. For a 1in100 chance of winning killer seats to any Toronto game, go to 1in100.net and your first entry is free. Brian Hayes, the O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Noodles, he's had better days. He's had better start to his days.
But here's the thing. I'm not even convinced that Ken... Like, I think he got the upgrade, but like maybe the show bought him a first-class ticket anyways.
Refresh, like, the list. Refresh the listeners.
Yeah.
Okay, so Chow from The Hangover.
Yes, Kenny Jeong.
Kenny Jeong, he's in town. He's playing a show, I guess, at McMaster tonight.
Yes.
And he must live in L.A., and he was jumping on a bird this morning from LAX to Pearson. You happen to be on the same flight.
Same flight with Chris Cuthbert, Sam Cicerello,
the crew.
Our crew.
The TSN crew that were calling the Ottawa-LA game last night.
Correct.
Got on a plane flying back to Toronto.
We'd all put in for upgrades.
All put in for upgrades. Now, Cuthbert was a lock because that guy flies more than anybody else.
He's a 3 million miler. That's the lock of the century.
He's getting the upgrade. He's moving up.
Yes.
Sam Cicerello, he flies a lot. He put in for the upgrade well in advance.
I think, maybe on the same page, but well in advance. He was number one on the wait list.
He got on number one, I guess. Cuthbert then technically number two.
Well, no, Chris went ahead. He was already a checkmark.
So he was already in.
So then there's three others waiting.
Right, and you were number three at one point.
I was three.
And there were three spots available. You thought you were in.
I thought I was the lock of the century, and then all of a sudden, I arrived at the airport, I was number four. And I thought I saw the abbreviations... K-J-O.
E.
E, sorry. And that would mean that gentleman
had leapfrogged
me out.
Chow. Someone had basically said, you need to take a lap.
Yes. Toodaloo,
That's what Chow said to you.
So
on the flight this morning.
I got the gate.
And when you asked him or somebody, hey, can I get some help here? Like, whose fault is this?
Not my problem.
That's what Chow said.
Yes, I asked him.
You asked specifically Chow from The Hangover.
Yeah.
And but he said it's not his problem.
He was on there, and he had a nice flight, sat right beside producer Sam Cicerello. They're buddies now, and picture. And
it's good to have him in town or in the greater Toronto area. He's in Hamilton, technically, but we love the Hammer.
Yep.
And the phone lines are open for the hour, 416-870-1050. If we can get Ken to call in, we would love to chat with him.
Promote his show, but really...
We'll promote his show, but we really want to talk about him giving you the boot.
Well, I'd like to just hear his process. Did he put in for the upgrade, or did the... I'm sure his agent or handler maybe just upgraded him on his own. He may have no idea.
So. Yeah, you could be right about that.
He's a star.
He is a star.
He was in The Hangover.
He was great in The Hangover. He's been in a lot of great stuff.
Exactly.
Kirk Morrison will join us here in a moment. Longtime NFLer, ESPN LA and Sirius XM NFL host. Two games tomorrow, two games on Saturday. I'm jacked up. Leafs Bruins tomorrow night. The Leafs coming off a 4-2 win last night where, you know, that Jersey team, they're not very good. The Leafs took care of business. We've been focused on William Nylander. This has been his week in terms of discussions and where he stands in the pecking order. And we kind of got into it in the previous segment. But I do think it's important to point out the past 2 years, he has been perceived, I think, by Babcock as a defensive liability. There were a lot of examples over the past 2 years where if the Leafs were up by a goal or two in the third, Connor Brown took his spot. And William Nylander moved down the lineup and didn't really get any shifts. In the third, he barely played. Yeah. He didn't even get the gratuitous final shift when he was technically with the fourth line on the bench the whole game in the third. The GOAT went over. Connor Brown went back over. Par Lindholm went over the bench.
Yeah, the trust isn't
there. The trust isn't there. But it's got to get there. Now, it's on both parties. William Nylander's got to grow as a player. But you can't just pay this guy $7.5 per year to be a guy who, when he's hot, he's putting up points. That's a big part of the money. But you got to be more complete. Right. Paying 7.5 for a guy that you're going to hide or you're afraid to put on the ice in certain circumstances is not ideal.
No.
And it's on him to grow, but it's on Babcock to get him there, too.
And he will. I mean, O talked about it. You get into shape. You game shape. You start to... Your mind starts to move a little bit quicker. Yeah, your feet are there.
When you're not in game shape, it looks like you're not working. It looks like you're not trying. End of periods, you're dying. End of shifts, you're dying out there. End of games, you're dying.
Yeah, I think there's an opportunity.
But how long are we talking here? The guy's been here for a month and a half. He's played, 15, 16 games?
I know, but like...
He's got 4 games left on my clock.
You were going to give him 20?
Yeah, like I know
a quarter of a season. Yeah, because
people are saying this is crazy. You gotta, he's here, start producing right away. Not realistic. He's got 4 left in my clock. I'm going to be saying,
right,
you need to knock it off and start performing because I'm sick of it.
Okay,
right.
We'll see.
I
tomorrow night I think is a big one for him because of him and Pastrnak. He's always played Boston well in past years.
Right.
I'd like to see him get off the snide tomorrow night. That's going to be a fun game.
It will be.
Tomorrow night.
Boston's going to be... They'll be owly, though.
They lost badly last night.
Chara got knocked over the boards by Ovi. Did you see that?
Yeah. Well, we haven't touched on the Marchand-Eller topic of discussion yet because... Was it the second game of the year or the first game of the year?
I think it was opening night. Preseason.
No, it was opening. It was during the regular season. I think it was opening night because the banner was unveiled. It was. It was Boston-Washington opening night. Lars Eller scored the... 7-0 goal or whatever. Marchand took it personally that he celebrated and went by the bench.
Yeah.
And Marchand jumped him in the third period and laid a pretty decent beating on him
right.
before he even had his gloves off. Well, Lars Eller went up to him last night when I think Washington was up 1-0 and challenged him.
Yeah.
And Marchand skated away and said, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah.
And I think he drew a penalty. And after the game, he took a shot at Eller saying he barely plays and I play a lot. That yeah. This is,
I actually don't buy into the code where if on that particular night I don't feel like fighting, I'm not fighting. It's like when I come in here, if I want to mail it in, I'm mailing it in.
So a fight is the equivalent of a full-blown mail-in.
No, I'm just
turning
saying,
down a fight.
If I'm not in the mood to fight, I'm not fighting.
But Lars Eller wasn't in the mood to fight. And Marchand said...
That's the way it goes.
So what...
You want a rematch? I'm not in the mood for a rematch. It'll have to be sometime else.
I guess the answer is Eller should have just dropped his gloves and started throwing.
Exactly.
That's what he should
That's
have
what
done.
Happened to you.
Yeah.
You tell the person, you have no choice in this situation. This is happening.
Right.
Because you gave him an out, and he took it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's what... You're right. That's what
actually,
Eller should have done.
If anything,
for
you're right.
Yeah.
Eller...
Not my
you beat
problem.
The piss out of me, and I didn't think about it. So I'm going to do the
Eller
same to you.
Took the high road, in essence, gave him an opportunity to drop the gloves. And he didn't, and they skated away. But the point is, he's saying, do what Marchand did to you.
Exactly.
Swap and dummy.
Eller decided to inject some honor into it,
correct.
Where Marchand blew past that stop sign.
Right.
Marchand said, I don't care what you think. I'm going to grab you, and I'm going to throw punches, and you have no say in this. Eller gave him an opportunity, and he took the back door to leave. But this is Marchand in a nutshell. This is what bothered me that night. Is that Marchand, all of a sudden, this man of integrity in the game that believes in the code, because how dare you embarrass us after you score?
Right.
I'm going to be the one that goes out there and shows you the old school way of retribution. And now Eller comes at you honestly and goes, all right, let's... And then he bails on it.
Yeah,
like, that's Marchand in a nutshell.
Yeah.
He's a great player, but that's what he is.
He is what he is, but, he's... He's
effective. He's a great player.
He is a great player. That's right. Like, and he's not wrong in saying, like, I'm a top-line player, Eller's a third-line player. Like, that is... But at the time of the game, too, it's not like, I'm going to be off for 2 minutes. This is a mismatch for us. Like, the game is over. So...
At the end of the first game, when it was 7-0.
Right.
Last night, it was, his explanation was it was a close game. I'm drawing a penalty. Get us back into it. We'll see what Bob McKenzie says about it. We'll catch up with Bob in about 15 minutes. Divisional weekend, 4 big games starting tomorrow. You can hear them on TSN Radio, watch them on TSN and CTV throughout the afternoons on Saturday and Sunday. And we're joined now to tee them up with longtime NFLer, with ESPN LA and SiriusXM NFL host back on Overdrive. Here is Kirk Morrison. How you doing, Kirk?
I'm doing good, fellas. How are we doing today?
We're doing pretty well. What's the buzz like in L.A.? You got 2 teams playing this weekend. What's that like?
Yeah, it's fun, man. It's great to be Los Angeles, right? And then you throw in a little Lakers tonight. Dodgers making some moves. You lose Kingsbury over at USC. So the city doesn't right now. The Clippers are playing well. It's a good sports town right now, Los Angeles, but I'm always been a football guy. Football is king, and I think that L.A. is really kind of wrapping its mind just around what's happening in Los Angeles, that this right now is not the norm around the country. You got two teams in the Elite Eight of the National Football League playoffs. The buzz is starting to get there, and it's almost like an arms race of which team is going to finish ahead of the other.
Well, isn't it kind of what needed to happen if they both show up and there goes a long... You look at some of the NFL teams, whether it be a Cleveland or someone else, if there's that long duration with no playoffs, I think in L.A. people obviously lose interest with different things to do. Isn't this exactly what needed to happen with both these teams coming there?
I think definitely. You wanted it to happen, but I think the bigger thing here in Los Angeles, it's not necessarily... it's always about winning. But I think the bigger thing is that both these teams are entertaining. You know, Los Angeles is Hollywood. It's movies, film, entertainment, music. You know, how can you entertain us? And I think both of these football teams are very entertaining. They've got star power. They've got quarterbacks, running backs. Like I said, they put points on the board. And so I think the success of the playoff run has been great. But I think all year long with the way that these teams play, the records that they have, it's kind of all coming together, and it's not necessarily pick, who's your team, who's your allegiance right now, whether it's Chargers or Rams. I think people right now are really just getting caught up on to what's really happening. To have a home playoff game for the Rams, I think, is going to be huge against the Dallas Cowboys.
Yeah, Rams-Cowboys tomorrow night, and Sean McVay preparing for the game, but his name is coming up a lot this week in connection with a lot of the hirings throughout the NFL. You mentioned Cliff Kingsbury, right. Matt LaFleur in Green Bay. Everyone appears to be looking for that next wave Sean McVay, yet he doesn't have a lot of playoff experience or success. You know, like, what happens if the Rams lose tomorrow night? What does that say about McVay?
Well, all it says is that he's still a good coach. You look at what he's done in the last two seasons. I mean, he lost three games this year. Okay, five games in his first year. That makes the Rams 24-8, in his first two seasons. I think the success speaks for itself, but now comes the next box. Well, he hasn't won in the playoffs. So that's a storyline. That's a narrative, definitely. But I think when you look around the league and you see some of these younger hires, to me, they've really been about the equating it to the quarterback. How do you compare? How do you... mentor, how are you able to score points? This league is about scoring points now. Defense, hey, you love to have it. We all want a defense, but when you look at the way that these teams are so exciting, scoring points, that's what puts butts in seats. That's what owners want to see, the exciting brand of football. And here in Los Angeles, 2016, we actually had that with Jeff Fisher. In terms of, it was a boring brand of football. It was run the ball, and try to play great defense and special teams. And you weren't winning games that way. And since McVay has kind of taken over in two short seasons, it's been wow. It's been almost leave the stadium exhausted. And I think NFL owners took note, and that's why you're seeing some of these coaches from the McVay coaching tree get hired, like you mentioned, and probably Zach Taylor in Cincinnati. And LaFleur already over in Green Bay.
With longtime NFLer from ESPN LA and SiriusXM NFL, Kirk Morrison here on Overdrive. As for the AFC side of things, you got four great quarterbacks. You got the two old guys going at it with Brady and Rivers, and then the two young guys in Luck and Mahomes. In terms of those four quarterbacks, though, I get the impression, just based on watching shows and reading articles and listening to radio throughout the week, that Brady would be ranked fourth in terms of expectation and form coming into these playoffs. Do you think that's fair or foul that of those four QBs left in the AFC that Brady is number four in terms of the ranking?
I think it's fair. And the reason why I say it's fair, because that's the way the Patriots like it. They like to be the underdog. They don't want to be at the top. They like to kind of be quiet and just work. And then all of a sudden at the end of the year and the Patriots are in the Super Bowl, you're like, wow, how can we ever doubt? Why did we try? Because we're always about the next. Hey, it's Phillip Rivers' time. Andrew Luck is back. Patrick Mahomes is the new NFL quarterback, possibly the league's MVP. But yet, Tom Brady is just the model of consistency. And I think what really puts, you know, Tom Brady kind of at the bottom is that he doesn't have the kind of weapons that you look at some of these other quarterbacks, what they have. I mean, you look at, you know, obviously with Phillip Rivers and with Tyrell Williams and Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, and then Melvin Gordon in the backfield. Mahomes has got, whether it's Sammy Watkins, Tyreek Hill, you know what I mean, Travis Kelce. Mm-hmm. And then Andrew Luck has got Marlon Mack and T.Y. Hilton. And you're saying, who's the best receiver for Tom Brady? It's an aging Rob Gronkowski and Edelman, who missed the first four games of the season. I think it's more to do with the talent of why we put the expectations so low for the Patriots, but yet we are never surprised when they exceed those expectations.
Great stuff, Kirk. Enjoy the weekend, man. We'll do it again down the road.
Sounds good, fellas. Enjoy the weekend.
There's Kirk Morrison, longtime NFLer. Yeah, listen, I can't dispute that because Brady, we're not talking historical, clearly. Brady separated himself from everybody, but Mahomes is going to win the MVP. Phillip Rivers is probably third on that list. It's probably Mahomes, Breeze, Rivers. Andrew Luck doesn't lose, and his weapons are off the charts. His line gives him a lot of protection.
How about Stephen A. Smith? He did a top five list with the best quarterbacks remaining in the playoffs. Brady not on the list. Guess who else? And I hate to be critical of other broadcasters. Sometimes we all do a segment that's stupid and you forget right. something and you butcher something.
Who did he have?
Breeze wasn't on the list either.
He didn't have Breeze. Yeah,
he didn't have Breeze.
It's like someone handed him a sheet of paper and said, this is your top five list. And he was in a rush and said, okay, let's get to it. It's like,
well, it may
come
have
on,
been,
dude.
You know, that's provocative. It gets people buzzing. Brady.
He likes to do
you think
that,
that's why he does it? So we're on here saying, what the hell is this guy doing?
If he was, it's brilliant because that's exactly what we're doing. I don't know. I want to give him more of a benefit of the doubt. I'm not surprised Brady's not in there. Like, Brady, this is actually sets up perfectly the way Kirk just explained it. Brady is in somehow an underdog role. Belichick, no one's talking about Belichick and him having a bye, and they're at home, and it's going to be cold in New England. And the Chargers are coming across the country, and they played kind of a nasty game last week. But
it does set up nicely for New England.
It does. But if you look at Brady's stats, they're not all world the way they have been throughout his whole career. They dipped a little bit this year. So,
but at some point, do you just doubt Brady? Like, it's Brady.
I wonder if Brady finally has acknowledged, you know what, the regular season is a formality, and I'm going to treat it the way LeBron treats the regular season, the way Crosby treats the regular season. Get through it, stay healthy, and then I'll let you know what I'm feeling like and what I'm looking like come the playoffs, because that's what I'm really here to do.
Right.
We'll find out on Sunday. But there are some great quarterbacks left.
Yeah.
But Breeze is 100% in the top. Breeze is ahead of Nick Foles. Like, Nick Foles has built up this mythical type figure, which he deserves because of what he did last year. Then he goes into Chicago last week and he wins. He's not Drew Brees. He's nowhere close to Drew Brees. Jared Goff is not Drew Brees. You know, in the NFC, it's pretty clear to me. Dak Prescott, like, who? How would those guys not be in the top?
Yeah, they're like. That list.
I can give you Luck, Mahomes, Rivers in ahead of Brady. I can understand that based on what they've done this season.
Yes, like
Mahomes,
based on their body of work.
Body of work, exactly. How they're looking and feeling going into the playoffs. But I'm not going to doubt Tom Brady. Like, if he goes off for 400 yards and three touchdowns and they win by double digits, I'm not shocked.
That's
if
what
he
I'm
does
saying.
That.
Like, shouldn't he be grandfathered in to the top five just on
merit and expectation
exactly
in history?
What you know Tom Brady's capable of at that time, at that critical time.
Yes.
To me, he should be.
But if we come in here on Monday, if he's brutal on Sunday and they lose badly, you know the discussion throughout the football world will be, this is it, it's over, he's done.
It's done.
The dynasty's over.
Yeah. Belichick and him are done. Like, the weird guy that he had on the sidelines. I can't remember that guy's name.
Yeah, what was that guy's name?
I don't know. His, like, life coach. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever that guy's name is, that guy's getting
He's involved in the TB12 stuff and...
Yeah,
we'll see.
That's the guy who claims he cured cancer.
I think he did claim he had
a cure or did something.
The inside track on it. Maybe he ran out of funding and he just said that's enough.
I don't know. Yeah, it is weird.
Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. Minor trades in the NHL today. We'll touch on those a bit. Get his take on the Bruins tomorrow night. Nathan MacKinnon explaining what happened the other night.
Yep.
McDavid's play last night. Lots going on in the NHL. Bobby Mack will join us next. Get to our best bets brought to you by ProLine later in the hour. Russell Martin has issued a statement thanking everyone in Toronto, thanking the Blue Jays. He's off to L.A. You knew that was coming. The second they bought out Tula Witzke, Russell Martin was packing his bags.
Is he going to manage there or is he going to play?
I think he's, yes, he's part manager, part player. He's the Reggie Dunlop of the major leagues. So we look forward to seeing what happens with Russell Martin. Jays are spending a lot of money for guys to not play for them.
Good.
But it's fine. Exactly.
I like
play
it.
The kids.
I actually have an appreciation for it. It's the Blue Jays plan.
I had
people out of there, man.
Yeah, get them out.
I had a buddy that got bought out one time, and he was like, let me get this straight. You're going to pay me $10 million to not play for your team. Like,
and then sign anywhere
and then
else.
He ended up signing another contract with another team and having an all-star season.
It's actually the perfect scenario. Here's Bob McKenzie, our TSN Hockey Insider. How you doing, Bob?
Where do we sign up for the buyouts?
Outstanding.
Bobby, if TSN offered you $5 million next year to not come here, would you do it?
Oh, I don't know if I could take that pay cut.
Well,
kidding.
Yeah, of course. We remember that being in New York for the Vinny LeCavier sweepstakes after he had been bought up by Tampa. And remember that, Bob? He was like,
wasn't it Philly?
Philly ended up giving him five years, $20 million or something like that.
24, it was something ridiculous.
It was crazy. And there were teams lining up to meet with Vinny after Tampa was buying him out for a ton of money.
We were around the corner from it. We were in New York for the draft.
Yeah.
And we said to each other walking around the streets, we were like, just think, Vinny LeCavalier is just bunkered down in a hotel room right now with teams lining up to sign him. Where if you talk to anyone from Tampa, they're like, this guy can't play anymore.
Yeah. He was just covered in dollar bills. He was just laying there in a pile of money.
It's a good setup.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
Exactly that.
It was a very good setup. What's going on here in Columbus? We talked yesterday a lot about the Bobrovsky stuff. And to Tortorella's credit, he didn't give us anything. He said, listen, go read the press release and that's it. And now they've come out today and said, we're all good. We're moving on. But is that true or what's up?
Yeah, they're moving on. In the context of all along, there were two things happening here. One is the micro, one's the macro. The micro was he got pulled from a game and he did something, said something, did something that he shouldn't have done that ticked off management, coaching staff, and maybe even some teammates. And so that is a separate entity from the fact that he's got a strained relationship with Tortorella because they haven't had success in the playoffs, and a lot of that kind of blew back on Bobrovsky, and Tortorella was somewhat critical of him in that. So the relationship there has been a little wonky, and it happens at a time when he's in the final year of his contract. He's going to be an unrestricted free agent. He's got a full no move and a full no trade. So even if the Blue Jackets got ticked off with him and said, we've had enough of you, we're going to get rid of you, you can't. So he's in the driver's seat on that front in the macro picture. And technically, he was the one, I want to say in the driver's seat, but he was the guy who this morning dictated how this micro issue was going to go. Either he was going to be contrite, and I presume that he was, and that allowed everybody just to say, okay, well, we're moving on. But you still have to deal with the other situation, but the manner in which Columbus will deal with that is likely just to let him play out the string and hope that he plays at a Vezina caliber level and that they upset a team or two along the way and they get themselves a deep run into the playoffs.
Sticking with the Columbus theme, Rick Nash officially retiring today, and the timing, I guess, is somewhat surprising. I mean, he had never indicated that he was officially going to walk away from the game. He was taking this half season off anyway. And I guess Dregs was reporting there were a bunch of teams that were calling his agent and wondering if he was going to get back into it. And he just said it's not going to make sense because of his concussions and because of his family and where he's at in his life. But that seemed like a pretty decent plan plan B for a lot of teams if they swung and missed on other guys, the idea of Rick Nash potentially being available.
Just not healthy. Can't do it, you know. And it's really sad because, I mean, you know, you play that long in the National Hockey League, you'd like to think that when you do retire, it's because you no longer want to play the game, not because you've got a brain injury that says, you know, if you don't feel good, just everyday life. And apparently that's kind of where Nash is at. So that's really sad and unfortunate on that level. In terms of the actual timing, I think he's probably known for a while that this wasn't getting any better, and that at least not sufficiently to the point where he'd be able to play. And but as is the case with a lot of these things, I'm going to assume that there's all sorts of insurance issues and whatever else, and that that contributed to the timing as well. But I suspect that he's known for a while that this was not going to be in the cards for him, even though there was plenty of interest in him. I mean, he could have signed with the team last July and hoped that he felt better by the time training camp started, but he knew that wasn't the right thing to do. And if he had, he would have signed in Columbus, more than likely. That's really his home now, and he had a real good meeting with John Davidson and Jarmo Kekalainen in the off season, and that was really kind of the plan, I think, was to sign back in Columbus and finish his career there, but his health just won't permit it, so here we are.
Well, you look at health, and then also him being his age, the speed of the game, taking a look at even a guy like William Nylander trying to jump on a really fast-moving train. It's taken Willie Nylander a long time even to just look like he's comfortable out there. I can't imagine a guy like Rick Nash, he's sitting at home, he's not feeling 100%, and then you've got to get up to speed or try to get up to speed. Like the game is, in being in the front lines, the game is at an all-time high as far as speed right now. I couldn't imagine a guy missing a half a season and then trying to jump on and catch up and feel comfortable. It would take him right to the playoffs until he felt decent.
Yeah, I think the presumption all along was that he wasn't going to play this year anyways, more or less. You know, obviously if he started to feel really good, he could entertain that notion, but I don't think he was making the progress on the feeling better front that he ever seriously considered that he was going to be back this season. I think there was maybe part of him that thought, hey, you know what, if I take a year off, maybe it'll be better. But I think he's just got to the point with his family and the fact that it's been this long. I mean, you know, at some point and I'm sure he's well past that point now, you just worry about your future life, never mind hockey. It's got to be hard to leave the game behind, but it's harder to leave the game behind knowing that what awaits you maybe isn't very good. And just everyday life, you know, he's not healthy and he doesn't feel as well as he could feel. And how long that's going to last, he has no idea. So it's just time, obviously.
With Bob McKenzie, our hockey insider. Yeah. Tomorrow night, Leafs Bruins. You know what this game means for the Leaf fans because of the recent history between these two teams.
Everything.
Yeah, everything. This is it. Exactly.
This is it.
You got to treat it like a game seven tomorrow night. Where do you stand on all this from an objective viewpoint, the importance of this game?
Well, it's just one game in 82, but it's not, because, you know, you want to try to send a message if you're the Leafs that Boston's not your bugaboo, that, you know, that this is that you're not jinxed against them, that you can beat them, and that they're not in your head. And what have you. And so it's an opportunity to do that. I mean, it's, even if they were to do that, it would give us all something to talk about for the rest of the weekend and on Monday. But beyond that, I don't think it's got any lasting impression, not on the Bruins or, for that matter, the Leafs. And you got to kind of start all over again if you meet in the playoffs and fresh, clean slate. So, but it's fun. I mean, there's certain games in every team's season that mean a little more. And for Toronto right now, given the way the division's structured and the way the teams are playing, games against Boston and Tampa Bay are more meaningful than just about anybody else.
Yeah, absolutely. Those are the two teams you're focused on right now.
Right.
You know, Montreal and Buffalo, they're in the shuffle. It's not like the Habs and the Sabres are out of the race.
They're almost in that just layer below.
Yeah.
It's just, and they're going to battle for that wild card.
And you got to, the reality is right now, you know, if Tampa's kind of running away with the division. And so if you're the Leafs, you're thinking, okay, if we finish in second or third place, we're going through Boston and then we're going through Tampa, unless there's upset. But, you know, those are the two teams you kind of have to beat to get to the conference, just to get to the conference final, not the Stanley Cup. You know,
yeah, no kidding.
That could be Washington or Pittsburgh or Columbus or the Islanders or who knows.
Bobby, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, whether you think the Leafs have enough sandpaper. Do you think they actually try to address it? And we've been talking on this show. I tried to explain it, my father's description of it, which is no league in pro sports flips a switch come playoff time as far as the physicality like the NHL. So you can believe in puck possession, in exits, in entries, but the one league that it's a totally different ballgame in the playoffs is the NHL. It turns into a war zone. Do you think they address that at all? And I'm not talking about going out there and getting Fraser McLaren and Colton Orr.
Yeah, but no, I understand. We're past that point.
Is it like any kind of addition like that, like a different kind of Zach Hyman or something to help out, or even on the back end?
You know, it's a good question. I think the priority obviously would be to get a defenseman and preferably a right shot guy, somebody that could replace Hainsey on the top pair, so you could play Hainsey more as a third pair guy and continue to be a big time penalty killer for Mike Babcock. But you'd like to get a first pair guy or a top four guy that could play the right side with Riley. And I don't know. Is it a puck mover? Is it a stay-at-home guy? Is it a combination thereof? Probably a combination thereof. Could you add a depth guy that is more of a banger? And but, you know, I mean, you got to be careful you don't get into the too one-dimensional stage where, you know, Mike Babcock loved Roman Polak, but most other people didn't. And Roman brought a unique skill to the game, but it wasn't always as productive or as, you know, work out as well as you would like it to, at the expense of maybe some other guys. So, you know, it's really a case of you got to take it player by player and who is the guy, you know. So I don't know. There'd be lots of people, you know, suggesting Radko Gudas is available and he's playing top 4 minutes in Philly and he's been very physical and he's having a good year. Does that make an appreciable difference if, you know, is that the type of player? And I thought the Leafs would probably want somebody with more dimension than that. But, I mean, maybe you can get, you know, both types of players. And I'm not saying Leafs are going out getting Gudas. I'm just saying getting somebody who can play high in your lineup, i.e. replacing Hainsey on the top pair. And that comes at enormous cost. It comes at the cost of a Kapanen or a Johnsson or somebody like that. And if that happens, now you've created a hole up front. So how do you replace that player? And, you know, is that where you go out and try to get a Michael Ferland as a rental or Wayne Simmonds as a rental? And I don't think the Leafs are too hot to trot on the whole rental thing. I talked a little bit about this on Leafs Lunch, where if you're going to give up significant draft picks and or any young prospects or whatever, I think you want to do it for somebody who's going to be around longer than this year. The Leafs window is open, and some people think it's open wider now than ever because of the financial pressures that will be brought to bear next year and the year after and each successive year. And that may be true, but I still don't think the Toronto Maple Leafs look at their team as a fully finished product that's at its zenith or its apex right now. And if they don't go out and grab a couple of really good rentals to push them over the top, then the window's going to close. I would say quite the opposite, that they still think their best chance to win a cup is in the next 2, 3, 4 years as opposed to just this year. So there's a lot of things to weigh in terms of acquisition costs and what you're getting out of it. I think the preference, whether it's up front or on the blue line, is to try and find somebody who's got term left and you know exactly what the dollars are so you can figure out how to put the jigsaw puzzle together with Marner, Matthews, and whichever one of the RFAs amongst Johnsson and Kapanen, amongst others, are still around.
Good stuff, Bob. Enjoy the weekend, buddy. We'll do it again early next week.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
It's Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. Yeah, I would make the case that you got to be really careful how you tread here. Tread lightly in terms of the trades and the idea of throwing around draft picks.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're going to become even more valuable once this salary cap becomes just a disaster, really. Like, once they're really up against it. Once Matthews gets paid, Marner gets paid, Nylander's in, Kapanen, Johnsson, Tavares, they're all in.
Yeah.
And you're up against it. You're going to need cheap assets in the future.
Mm-hmm.
So trading seconds and third rounders to go for it right now, it better be for a guy who you know.
But don't you agree, Brian, that sooner or later, you can say, oh, we got a plan for the future. There's a salary cap. They kind of got their roster in place, their go-to guys. It's now time to kind of...
I agree that they're in the window. I'm not saying they're not in the window.
Like,
I guess
are you looking to do, draft a number one centerman?
Well,
no, they have three of them.
Maybe if you get one, there's nothing wrong with still getting another one.
I get
one.
It. You can't disregard it completely.
Get one. But you go get as many as you can.
You go for the best, the most talented players, regardless of position, because you can always move that asset. I'm not convinced. I just, for some reason, I don't know if Kadri's here for that whole run.
He might not be.
That's so, one guy that they may have to just shed $4 million in salary. And he may be a byproduct of the cap.
But that's what I'm saying. If he's out, you better find the guy who can play.
It's not the GOAT going up. It's not. Somebody else.
It's a guy that you might have to draft in the second round this year that in 2 years can play.
But that's that.
But if you don't have your second round pick to take that guy.
It also could be somebody that you acquire in shuffling the deck chairs because you do have depth. Like, let's just say, and again, we're just speculating. Let's just say Kapanen, he's not going to fit into your structure because everyone else has gotten paid and there's just not enough money to go around. But he can fetch you something. That's where Kyle's job is really going to be on the clock. He's done a great job so far, but his job has been, for lack of better words, like it's been nice. He's in the honeymoon stage right now.
Yeah,
because Tavares, he made the pitch, but Tavares wanted to come.
Wanted to be a part of this.
You know, there's some moves that really Lou and Shanny dropped into his lap, a pretty damn good team.
Yeah.
Now he's got to run with it and grow it. But, you know, the challenge is to get these guys signed so that you don't disrupt a lot of
the core. But that's what I'm saying is you don't want to find yourself in the position Chicago's in where they're top. And because
you had to throw over Bufflin. You had to throw over some other players.
And they could replace them the first couple times.
Right.
Now, the first couple times they replaced them. Bufflin, Ladd, Versteeg, they all left. Yeah. Bolin, they all left after the first one or the second one.
It's retrospective analysis, but looking back, I don't know if Lou's policy on getting this done last July for these guys, but wouldn't that have been something of interest to you?
Obviously, that would have been ideal.
Yeah,
now.
I mean, no,
you know, now you look back on it, clearly they should have done what they could have done. But who's to say Marner and or Matthews didn't say, actually, not interested, I'll talk next summer. Who knows? Dave Poulin was up on SportsCenter detailing his MVP candidates, 1 through 5. He's got Goudreau at 1, MacKinnon at 2, McDavid at 3, Kucherov 4, Marner at 5. So,
I think it's fair.
Yeah, that's the category. Again, as I've been saying, and I will continue to say, if Edmonton's in the playoffs, McDavid's number one. Yeah. I think it would be a joke if he didn't win it.
You're right.
They honestly might have to go.
But you can't sleep on Kucherov.
You got to make like the
Kucherov.
Playoffs.
Kucherov's been outstanding, brilliant. But that's the deepest, most talented team in the league.
They might have to say stuff about making the playoffs and give it to McDavid this year because
that conversation will be had.
He's going to be enough.
We'll see. I
they're
mean,
so bad.
There's still 40 games left.
Yeah.
There's still 40 games left.
Well,
like, that's you know, you're halfway through. Like, Goudreau deserves, like,
all
you think Elias Lindholm would have 20 goals in Carolina right now?
No way.
21 goals in
deserves
Carolina?
Deserves a ton of accolades.
Like, there is. There's five at least. There's maybe 6 or 7 MVPs right now.
Before we go to break, I want to hear what my man Chow said to Noodles on the Bird.
Toodaloo, mother...
Get to our best bets brought to you by Proline next. So the big news in Toronto today is that Chow stole Noodles' seat on the flight.
No.
From L.A. to Toronto. But besides that, the Blue Jays have traded Russell Martin to the Dodgers. He's got $20 million left on his ticket. It sounds like they're going to pick up somewhere between $16 and $18 million. It's a lot of change for a guy not to play.
Yeah.
They owe Tulowitzki $38 million not to play. And it's not like those two teams are going to, like, donkey organizations.
No.
Yankees, Dodgers, okay. They'll probably play each other in the World Series. It'll be Tulowitzki and Russell Martin in the World Series. But if you're a Blue Jay fan...
You've moved on.
You've moved on, you know...
They broke up the band.
They broke up the band a long time ago. You know, when Edwin left, that was the band that was breaking up. They haven't done anything since Edwin left. Nothing.
Take a look at that core... When Joey Bats had the bat flip.
Mm-hmm.
They're all gone.
You know what I read earlier in the week was that the ball was placed on auction last weekend.
Really?
The ball that Bautista hit. But because of the significance of the bat flip,
yeah,
I think the ball has been completely devalued. Like, historically, that's what you want, right? When someone hits a big home run, you know, or 3,000th hit, or, you know, the Joe Carter, when he hit the game winner in Game 6, no one's talked about his bat. I mean, I'm sure his bat is somewhere. He might have the bat.
But the bat from the bat flip is probably worth more than the
ball. Way more than the ball. The ball, like, I'm not saying I wouldn't want that ball.
I would buy that bat at an auction. Like, I would want that in my living room.
So would I. That's what I'm saying. If someone came to you and said you can either have the ball that he hit out or the bat that he flipped, who's buying the ball?
Nobody.
Nobody's buying the ball.
Whoever came in second for the bat.
Maybe.
If you're a memorabilia guy.
Yeah.
If you're the loser, like if you bid X amount of dollars and somebody outbids you, then you turn your money over to the ball instead of the bat. But it's the bat every day of the week. That's what
every day of the week.
That's what the image was.
That's what's synonymous with the whole inning.
Isn't that the memes? Though there were memes of like, you know, Bautista with the bat flip, but then it was like LeBron doing that to like Toronto. Like there were so many different
LeBronto.
Like,
he was throwing, you know, the CN Tower.
Yeah, there were so many different things.
Yes, it was such a big moment. Like
it became a massive meme,
huge meme, and that's why the bat is way more valuable. Time now for our best bets brought to you by ProLine. I've learned this whole season. I learned last week. I'm taking the dogs. I'm taking the points with Indianapolis at Kansas City. Taking the points Dallas in LA against the Rams. Taking the points the Chargers at New England. I'm staying away from that New Orleans game. I feel like the Saints are going to win big, but I don't know.
Throw down
20, score 100. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio and get way into the game. With ProLine, it's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. ProLine, get way into the game. Raptors in action tonight. Leafs Bruins tomorrow night. You can hear that right here on TSN Radio.
All the football games on Sunday, and we break it down on Monday at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.
Toodaloo, mother.
Yeah.